Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst of friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
Did you have to think about it for a second? It was like, wait a minute, is Mike actually on the show with me? Is that this happening right now?
It's been a little while since we had opening day, and life for me has been a little bit crazy. And so, like, I actually haven't hosted a podcast in a couple weeks.
Yeah, have you been okay? I know you like hearing yourself talk a lot. So is this okay? Are you okay?
I think I'll be okay. It's getting a little bit back into the groove thing. I've been, either a co-host or guests and stuff on the radio and podcasts and things like that over the last couple weeks. But I'm writing a whole lot. I mean, I'm writing probably 8 to 15 articles a week.
Wow.
About 8 to 13 articles a week. I'm still doing all the podcasts over Sleeper in the Bus.
Managing all of TGFBI's leagues.
Yeah, and that was a disaster. Oh, my God. You know, I haven't been on since the disaster that was the first Fab run. and I only have myself to blame. Like, I'd love to be able to, like, blame Fantrax or blame the people in the leagues, but it's really my own fault. I caved to pressure of other people that were freaking out because they couldn't understand the Fantrax's setup, and I enlarged the amount of people you could pick up to make sure everybody got who they wanted, and then, of course, everybody got way too many people. So, like, it was my bad, but it was, like, it ruined my Sunday, because I spent my Sunday night and Monday morning, because I spent, like, the next, like, 24 hours just, like, rescinding overbids and then awarding bids, and it was really bad.
Sounds like a nightmare.
It was. So, that being said, and not that anybody gives two shits about
your problems.
Yeah, and, my problem.
You being the hardest working guy in the industry, all that stuff. Yeah.
That is over and done with. We are back and rolling. You, me, and Matt on this podcast. I'll be here every week, except for I'm heading out on vacation in a few weeks. So you and Matt will have to figure that one out. Either you or Matt will join me. We'll start getting some more guests. If there's anybody in the industry you want to hear from, hit me up on Twitter, at Justin Mason FWFB, or hit Mike up on Twitter, at Mike Warner FWFB. If there's, like, a guest that we haven't had on before, or someone,
I doubt that. Yeah,
or someone you've really liked in the past that you want us to have back, it won't be Paul Sporer, because I talk to him too much anyways.
Sorry, you could just listen to Sleeper in the Bus if you want to listen to Justin and Paul talk. Although, I never get to talk to Paul, like, over the radio, so
yeah, that's by design.
Yeah, although we are probably famous enough at this point, at least you are, to where we don't need guests, right? Like, I don't think we need guests anymore. We're like, we can stand alone.
Well, we definitely can, but it's fun to have, like, that. You know, one of the reasons we put FWFB together the way it was, because, you know, those of you who've been with us since the beginning knows that Friends Fantasy Benefits has changed dramatically over the course of the last three, four years that we've been doing this, especially in the last 2 years since you and I kind of became the main owners of the site along with Matt. Things have changed a lot. We've added a lot of new people, especially this year. You've heard a lot of new voices on the website or on the podcast, a lot of new writers on the website. So we like to offer as many voices as we can because I think that, differentiates us from a lot of other podcasts and websites out there that you hear the same voices and same thought processes. And we try to match people up who are going to disagree a bunch. So you kind of get different viewpoints. So I like having guests on because it kind of gives an outside perspective that you don't necessarily hear every week.
I agree. I remember the first time we had a guest, I actually wasn't even part of the show yet, but we had Spore and Colette on, like, mm-hmm. to start off with. It was like the biggest deal ever. It was like we could have just ended life there and we would have been happy. So we've come a long way.
Well, and there was a big, like, prank war that went back and forth on that one. But
that's true.
You'll have to go back and find those episodes. I think it was like episode 13 and episode 16.
Good luck.
Yeah. We're now, I think this is episode 409, if I'm not, I'm not mistaken. So good luck going back and finding those. I don't even know if they're on or in our iTunes feed at this point. But we're going to talk a bunch of baseball, talk about kind of some either hot starts or guys who've started off really cool. You know, like I said, you can follow Mike on Twitter at MikeWarnerFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Matt isn't here, but you can follow him on Twitter at MDTopFWFB. You know, today was kind of a weird day in baseball, man. It's like everybody's getting hurt.
Yeah, it's bad. This is really bad. This has probably been the worst day of all of them. Go down the list. So Nelson Cruz is coming back. That's great. But Xander Bogaerts is going to be out for a while. Unknown, really, with the problem with his ankle. That's really worrisome. Rizzo goes on the DL. Odor leaves the game with a hamstring injury. Eugenio Suarez has a fractured thumb. Who knows what he's going to look like when he comes back, and he's going to be out for at least a month at that point. Jose Martinez collided with Lorenzo Cain, and Lord knows what's going on with them. Martinez in particular has been like a guy that I have on many teams, so I'm really, really worried about that.
Yeah, I got a ton of shares of Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah, and Cain with the Brewers was really projected to probably have a career high in steals. So if there's any type of real problem there, especially with his leg, I think his leg is the problem here. When he collided with Martinez, then that could be.
It looks like
real
ankles
trouble
for both of them, honestly. Though I think Martinez got the worst of it. They were both removed from the game. But it appeared to me that Martinez was in much more pain and having much more difficulty. Kind of got kicked in the heel, and just you kind of hope and pray that it's just like a contusion of some sort and not like a torn Achilles or something like that. Because that's the fear when you see something like that is either a break or a tear of some sort. So I hope those guys are doing well. It changes around a little bit of our show notes. We'll still talk about Odor, but maybe we'll move by him a little bit faster. But I think the rest of the guys are still intact, and some are coming off either just dreadful starts or really, really hot performances in starts to the year. Let's start with a guy who has started off pretty ice cold, and that's Jose Ramirez. Jose Ramirez was a early second rounder in a lot of leagues. Some leagues fell to the mid second round, but I didn't see him fall outside of the second round very often. Starting this year off, he is currently, as we speak, hitting .086 with an on base percentage of .256, a slug of .171. Are you worried about Jose Ramirez?
I am not worried about Jose Ramirez because at some point he's going to turn things around. He's walking a lot as well. So he's never really been a big on-base percentage guy or walk rate guy, but he has a walk in, five of his last six games, actually six of his last seven games, if you include tonight. He's only struck out twice all year thus far. I mean, I think he's just getting really unlucky. I know that there's a couple of things kind of ailing him at the moment, but as the season goes on, he's going to turn things around, and I'm literally not even 10% worried about this. I think that we're going to be fine. So,
yeah, I mean, if you look, almost all of his underlying numbers are in line with what we saw last year. And not just in line, so like there are a number of them that are better. What's happening, I think, is he's pressing. I think he started off slow. And he's pressing a little bit. He's also seeing a little bit different of a pitch mix than he's used to seeing. He's seeing a lot more junk. Guys are less willing to throw it in the zone.
Yeah, throwing around him, which is why he's walking more.
Exactly. And so sometimes he's pressing a little bit, trying to get those, trying to make something happen and kind of hit his way out of it. One of the things I really noticed is that his hard contact, while it is down, his fly ball rate right now is 58.1%. That's insane. Yeah. And that's going to come back down to earth. And as it does, you'll start seeing things kind of correct itself. I'm not worried. Like you said, he's at least walking right now. So in on-base percentage formats, he's not destroying you. If someone in your league is freaking out, then now's the time to buy.
Agreed.
Odor, he did leave today with a hamstring injury, pulled up lame while running to first, I believe. You know, aside from the injury, he's struggling in a very similar fashion to Jose Ramirez. Exact same thing is happening. People are throwing him junk, trying to get him chased because he's not a guy who's very patient at the plate. You know, again, his numbers are either in line with what they were, what they've been in previous seasons, or they're actually better. He's actually hitting the ball harder than he has in the past. His hard contact percentage is up almost over eight percentage points so far in the short sample of a year. This is kind of who you get with Rougned Odor. There are going to be moments where he struggles, and he's actually been a little bit better as of late before leaving with the injury. So his average is actually above where it was last year. Any worries about Rougned Odor?
Well,
other than the injury.
Yeah, obviously, I loved him. I was touting him heavily prior to the season starting, saying it was absolutely ridiculous where he was going in drafts, and I still believe that. I don't like that he has hit eighth and seventh in the lineup at times this year. I would much rather see him up top in the two spot. We might not see him stick there for the majority of the year, and again, like this hamstring ailment kind of to the side here, I think that things will get better. I do always look at his infield pop-up rate whenever I'm kind of checking him out, and right now it's right in line with what he did last year, which is a big problem. But I'm still steadfast with him. It's way too early for me to make any type of real adjustments in terms of my projection. I still think that he's a 30-15 player. The Rangers as a whole have really started off kind of sluggish as an offense anyways. They're like 22nd in runs per game right now, and I think that will change, especially as Arlington starts to warm up during the summer months. So it's a little early. I'm still buying in on Odor. I think that we're going to see a much better batting average than he put up last year, somewhere in the 250 to 260 range. He's still going to steal a bit. He still is making incredibly hard contact prior to today's game. His contact skills have overall been all right. He only had a 21% strikeout rate coming into today. So overall, I'm still on the Odor bandwagon. I'm not going to say I'm completely worry-free here, but I'm still steadfast with it.
And I'm right there with you. So we're just going to move right on into the guy that everybody in the universe is trying to make me eat crow on. And I'm not going to eat crow on this yet. I don't know. So this is what happened. You know, about, I don't know, a week ago, like, no joke, like, maybe like the first or second day of baseball of the season, I was watching the Braves play. And I saw Dansby Swanson hit a weak ground ball to set up like a double play or something like that. And I jokingly put out on Twitter, remember when Dansby Swanson, or everybody thought Dansby Swanson was good? And I was like, that was fun. And I said, you know, or something along those lines. And then I, you know, replied to the tweet with the Pepperidge Farm remembers guy. Now, since then, Dansby Swanson has absolutely just been crushing it. Let's see. So yeah, that day was probably opening day, but I can't remember exactly when it is. I'm too lazy to go look it up. But since then, he has hit .433, .452, .700, one home run, one stolen base. Mike, is it time for me to eat crow?
Oh wow! Time for you to eat crow after 34 at bats in the 2018 season, at least to date. I don't know what he did today.
Yeah, but 31 plate appearances since then. That doesn't include the 0-for-3 today.
0-for-3 today, yeah, with a strikeout. I will say this: like, I rarely kind of call people out, but there was some guy that really was inappropriate, like on Twitter with you. That I just read it last night, and I was like sincerely pissed off. So if like you're mad about somebody's like a guy in the fantasy industry's take on something, you can like be respectful about it and not be an asshole. So that's what I'll say about that. But with Dansby, like, I'm still where I was last year, which is in your camp. I don't believe that he is going to be a top 20 shortstop this year. He right now is like a 440 BABIP coming into today, and there's nothing in his profile, his bad ball profile, his hard contact, anything that tells me that he's going to be like a 20 home run bat this year. I think I would still project him to be like a 10 and home run guy. And they're going to give him the playing time this year. I think Dansby's going to be cemented in that shortstop role. But like, I just don't believe he's somebody that's going to hit over 300 based on his contact skills throughout the minors and last year. He's not somebody that's going to hit for power. He has a little bit of speed, but not a lot. Like, this is just he is your prototypical middle infielder in an NL only league. Like, that's what I look at him as. And there's no way that, I mean, the Braves are tops in the league right now on offense, and I don't see that continuing either. So overall, I like Dansby as a person. I love that he is from Vanderbilt University. I've watched him play a ton, but he's not going to be somebody that in fantasy we're going to be loving this year.
You know, I won't get into all, like, too much of all the hate I've been receiving. Aside from, you know, to one, I did tweet out something about people being morons and idiots, and I used some profanity because I've been getting, like, nonstop tweets about Dansby Swanson. And while I still think that if you're claiming victory on a 162-game season after game 8 or 9, you're an idiot. Like, like, this is, like, confirmation bias at its worst. And it's absolutely ridiculous that people think that somehow a week's worth of at-bats, like, half of which were in Colorado,
yep.
means absolutely anything. That being said, well, actually, no, not that being said, because I'm not wrong. Like, Dansby Swanson is going to be a fine major league player. He is not going to be a good fantasy option in any sense of the word. Like, he's going to be a 250 to 270 hitter, a guy that hits 9 to, you know, 12 home runs a season, steals a handful of bags. And if that's what you want in this offensive environment, then go for it. Like, this, like, people right now are going insane over Dansby Swanson. And if you, for some reason, drafted him in your league, or you've been holding on to him in a dynasty league, sell now. Because there's no, his draft stock or his value, trade value, will never be higher than it is right now.
I agree.
We're busting through these. Speaking
Yo,
of...
live update on the show. Well, not really live by the time you hear it, but Jose Martinez has a right Achilles contusion is what they're saying.
Hey,
so,
contusion's way better than a tear.
A tear. Yes, I agree.
It's also interesting because a contusion is typically a bone bruise, and the Achilles is not a bone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting phrasing, but either way, it's not a tear. So, like, I'll take that. He's going to miss some time. I'm going to have to change around my tout daily lineup for tomorrow because I made up a lineup for that, and he was in it. So, but that being said, that's pretty decent news. Let's hope Lorenzo Cain's news is good as well.
Yeah.
and Kendrys Morales, because I had Eugenio Suarez as my util in tout head-to-head. He broke his thumb so right after waivers ran for tout. So I had to, you know, I wasn't able to get a replacement. I had to put him on my reserve list, and I put in Kendrys Morales.
Oh, well, so, good. You have some good fortune.
Yeah, so at least in tout wars, like, you can, if a guy goes on the DL, you can replace him. So midweek, so... Hopefully, if he's going to be out for longer than a couple days, they put him on the DL, and I can throw in Neil Walker or something like that. But enough about my teams. Let's talk about Tim Anderson, another guy that has started off really well so far this season, hitting .265, .342, .529, but already has 3 home runs and 5 stolen bases. Is this the beginning of a breakout?
I think it is. At the same time, I say that with a lot of hesitation because Anderson has been a guy that has always been a really good bat-to-ball skills player, somebody that really doesn't take a lot of walks. So what the White Sox have done this year, which I really agree with, is they've stuck the really good eye of Yoan Moncada up at the top of the lineup as opposed to Tim Anderson. And they've dropped Anderson down to, what, 6th, 7th, 8th is where he's mainly batted 7th. this year. So I definitely like that move by the White Sox. And it's also correlated to him having a little bit higher walk rate. And that's not something that's going to stick because he isn't a real selective hitter. But I do think he will have a better than, 2% walk rate, which is what he had in 2017. So maybe somewhere in the 5 to 6% range. He's always been a guy that can hit. I mean, he hit 17 home runs last year. So him hitting above 20 this year, he has enough power to do that. He doesn't hit a ton of fly balls. Like last year was a 28% fly ball rate, 14% home run to fly ball. Right now, you know, he's hitting somewhere in the vicinity of 50% fly balls. Like, that's not going to stick. And his ISO is going to obviously drop down a bit to career norms as well. But I do think 20 home runs is certainly in the realm of possibility for him. Batting average will be a scare because he is such a unselective hitter. But overall, I think that we're going to see a guy that's going to hit, 260, 270, 20 bombs. I think at least 20 stolen bases, maybe more, possibly even 30 if the White Sox really let him run, which I think that they will, obviously, based on his 5 stolen bases to date. I think that it's going to be a breakout with the batting average being the lone category that we are kind of like meh at the end of the season. But I think he's going to be a top 10 shortstop easily.
I'm going to agree and disagree with you all at the same time. Like, I agree with certain parts of your argument. And I think first and foremost, the most important part of the argument that I agree with is the most important part of this whole discussion is I agree. I think that he's going to set a career high in stolen bases. And I think this is a guy who this year he's already talked in recent interviews about wanting to be aggressive on the base paths, and he's been given the green light by the organization to just go, which is good because that's not something we necessarily saw last year. Dude stole 15 bases in 16 attempts. Like, let the dude run. Every time he gets on first base, I don't even care if there's someone on second base. Just let the guy run.
Yeah, let's be clear. He didn't get those attempts until September. He stole 9 of those bases in September last year.
They're so coming into that,
it was 6 stolen bases total. So go on. Sorry. He already stole just about as much as he did throughout 5 months last year in 1 month now.
Not even a month. It's been a week and a half.
Yeah.
That is super encouraging. I think the power numbers take a step back. I don't think there's any way he's hitting 20 home runs. I know people are like, well, he's already got 3 this season. Well, 2 came in the home run derby on opening day against Kansas City pitching. And no joke, they gave up 8 home runs that day.
Yeah.
So that's not going to continue. I don't buy it. The other thing, but that being said, I still think he steals another 10 to, or sorry, hits another 10 to 12 home runs this season, which gives him 12 to 15 home runs, which isn't a bad outcome for a guy who I think can steal 35 bags. And, I legitimately think he can steal 35 bags. The thing is, I don't know where you get this idea that he's going to walk more this year. He's never walked. The last time he had a walk rate above 4.5% was in rookie ball in 2014. Like, he has never walked, and he's not showing any improved plate discipline. He's still swinging a ton outside the zone. He still doesn't make a lot of contact. He has his swinging strike percentage now, of course, early small sample size, 16.1% is his swinging strike percentage right now. This is not a guy who's patient at the plate. That's never going to change. That was a development flaw by the White Sox organization to allow this guy to advance through the minor leagues without ever learning how to, take a walk. I don't think that's changing. Maybe he walks more than he did last year because he walked 2% of the time. But, he's not walking 5% of the time because he's never done that.
Yeah, I mean, he's already walked twice in one game this year, and he did that only once all of 2017. So, there is something to be said for a player that is 25 years old bumping up his plate skills a tad bit, in a season. I mean, that's not, I think, out of the realm of possibility. And maybe I am wrong. I mean, you are right. He has always been a free swinger. This is not an argument that he definitely has. But the other part of it is, I mean, that just only makes his value better in 5x5 as opposed to OBP formats. But I just think that based on where he is in the lineup, that he could be a little bit more selective because he doesn't have the pressure of being on top. That's the one case that can be made about him being just a little bit more selective. And again, it won't be a ton. If he does improve his walk rate, it's going to be maybe 1 or 2 percentage points from last year. But that's it. I mean, it's really not even a real argument because he could easily just stay being a guy that literally doesn't walk at all, which is what he is anyways.
Which, you know, I mean, it can work. We've seen Billy Hamilton, though Hamilton has obviously gotten better or done a better job of walking and better pitch recognition than he did early on in his career. And that is something that maybe Anderson improves on as he gets a little bit older and a little bit more mature. But, you know, there are going to be long struggles with this guy throughout the season. There are going to be weeks in which he, you know, has three hits. Yeah. Like, you know, and you're going to have to bear through absolutely. It, you know, if you want the stolen bases, because the stolen bases should come. And I think last, you know, the 15 we saw last year in 146 game could easily be doubled this season with how aggressive he appears to want to be early on. I mean, he's already got 5 stolen bases through his first 8 games. He did have a one for five today. So, like, that's not super encouraging, but, you know, he's a guy that has the potential to be a real difference changer in the speed department, and that's always an added bonus. And we've even seen, you know, times in which Hamilton has struggled return top 50 value just because he can steal so many bases. I'm not saying that Anderson is going to do that, but I see no reason to think he can't return top 100 value, which is a pretty nice a return on investment from where you got him in drafts.
Agreed.
All right, let's talk about Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole has been kind of a on and off again boyfriend for you. You've always loved him as a player, but you've been in and out on his draft value. You were in this year, and so far Gerrit Cole is rewarding you huge. What do you think about his hot start so far?
Yeah, I don't want to toot my own horn too quickly because I pretty much have Cole as an ace in a ton of leagues this year. I just really stockpiled on him and put a lot of faith in him. And to date, he has rewarded me. What the Astros have done with his repertoire is they have essentially scrapped his sinker and scrapped his changeup. And made him a three-pitch pitcher, slider, curve, four-seam, and that has generated career highs in curveball with percentage and fastball with percentage, and it's not really close. The slider is still getting about the same amount of whiffs as it did last year, but he's just – I like that they have simplified things for him. The results have obviously been amazing to date. Is he going to be a Cy Young candidate in the AL? Maybe, but he's not. He's obviously not this good. He's not 0.64 ERA good. But I do think that we could be seeing a year where we do see the full-on breakout because the Astros are just that smart as a coaching staff. We knew that they would toy with him a little bit, but they've obviously had positive impacts on guys like Justin Verlander, Dallas Keuchel, just to name a few, you know. And I just believe in Cole in Houston is just kind of a beautiful scenario for me, and I think that it's probably going to be the same. I had faith coming into this year. I still have faith now. Obviously, this is working out. If I'm going to give like a take in terms of what I think could happen negatively, we could again see his home run rate spike. We could see his, you know, strikeouts drop because he starts toying with his mechanics a little bit more again. You know, the velocity though has been stable. He's been giving up more fly balls, but that hasn't hurt his home run rate yet. So we could see, you know, maybe again, if he gives up more home runs because of the fly balls, maybe, but I don't see anything that's really concerning me right now. I think again that he's going to be a 3-ish ERA guy, solid whip, a tremendous strikeout numbers. I think he's going to set a career high in strikeout rate this year. I love everything about it. So I'm all in.
I'm super impressed. And like, obviously there are going to be bumps along the way.
Oh yeah.
But like, this is, I want to say it was 2 years ago where you were kind of out on his draft price and I was all about it. And he disappointed. I'm pretty sure it was 2016 where he only pitched 116 innings. It was 388 ball. So, I mean, wasn't atrocious, but like I had him as like a top 15 pitcher that year. And
well, I put him as a top 10 guy last year and he disappointed me then. I thought that he would come back and do what he's doing now last year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Pirates just, I think that it's beneficial for a guy like Cole to really keep things simple. Like, can you imagine Luis Severino having like 4 or 5 pitches? No, because that would just kind of really hinder the rest of his.
I'm just glad he got 3.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad we got a third out of him. But, you know, with Cole having him throw three pitches as opposed to it's kind of like Trevor Bauer too, you know, like stop having him mess with like 5, 6, 7 different pitches and keep his
15 pitches. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep his arsenal simple and let him just be really good at three. And that's, I think, going to lead to positive results. And I think that's what's happening with Cole. Only 27 still.
Yeah. And I mean, the results, I mean, aside from obviously the surface numbers look fantastic through 14 innings, the underlying numbers are amazing. He's getting swings and misses outside the zone at a rate we've never seen from him before. He has over doubled his swinging strike rate.
Yeah, 20%-ish right now.
Oh, man.
71% first pitch strike rate, which is
60% contact rate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, and he's getting ahead. Like the 71% first pitch strike rate shows that he is getting ahead of hitters. I mean, I've watched both of his starts. He hasn't even been perfect. You know, it's not like he's spotting everything perfectly on, you know, on the black or anything. He's just able to get ahead and able to get guys kind of really making you know, non-solid contact. And I mean, I'm impressed, like you know.
Yeah, it's been really impressive, and I think, and like, don't get me wrong, he's getting a bit lucky, you know, BABIP is really low, he hasn't had a 100% strand rate. Like, these are all small sample numbers, and they'll even themselves out a little bit, but it's super encouraging to see that the change in pitch mix be this impactful this early on. And like, you're seeing this up and down the Houston rotation. I mean, Verlander did this a little bit last year when coming to Houston, and he's been dynamic. And I don't know if you've watched Verlander pitch this year. Verlander looks like, you know, mid-20s Verlander right now.
Oh, yeah. He looks great. I mean, I was saying just a couple years ago that he might be done, and Houston has really revitalized him. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel safe with Verlander, and I would have never said that like 3 years ago.
He was like one of those guys, like, I, you know, in terms of like the aces that I kind of just put down towards the bottom because of his age and because we've seen him be volatile in the last few years, and I got zero shares, and I'm regretting every minute of it, because every time I watch him pitch, you know, like, I went in and watched every single one of his pitches in his last start. And like, he does, he looks like vintage Verlander, and I'm super bummed I have zero shares. Like, he's one of those guys that I may try and go out and get and see if maybe someone wants to try to sell high on him, and, you know, see if I can, you know, buy a little bit lower than they think they should be getting.
Sure.
So let's go ahead and move on. Who do we want to talk about next?
Got Bundy down.
Yeah, let's talk about Bundy. Dylan Bundy, once again, he pitched again tonight and was very, very good. So, you know, through 7 innings, gave up 2 earned runs, struck out 10 guys, only issued 2 walks, did allow a home run. But Dylan Bundy, through 3 starts this year, has now pitched 20 innings of 1.35 ERA. FIP and XFIP are pretty close in line. He's got a strikeout rate in the double digits. What are your thoughts on Dylan Bundy?
I can't peg this guy. that's my thoughts. 1 year I'm like, I'm all in. The next year I'm like, I give up. And, you know, right now my thoughts are, I've watched him. I didn't watch him tonight, but I've watched his other couple of outings, and he's looked great. You know, he's somebody that really has, he's added the sinker. You know, he's had the sinker in the past, but he added it this year at a 12% clip, at least coming into tonight's start. So he's essentially a 4-pitch guy, but you know, he still has that kind of like famous cutter slutter type deal, along with the curve, sinker, and four seamer, and he's been able to generate whiffs out the ass. Like, it's really been able to help his fastball and getting guys to chase. I mean, he's looked really good. So as of right now, like, the thing that's always worried me about him is his durability concerns. Last year, 170 innings pitched, we saw kind of back and forth in terms of him, you know, doing well and then kind of falling out of favor a bit and then doing well again. I think this could be the year where we see a little bit more consistency. Obviously, like Cole, he's not going to be this good all year long, but I do think somewhere in the vicinity of like a 3.5 ERA. What's his XFIP on Fangraphs?
His XFIP on Fangraphs is, after tonight, it is 249.
Okay. See, on HQ, they only have the two starts. It was at 3.3 for their expected ERA metric. I bet it probably drops down to like a 2.8 or 2.7, somewhere in there. But
which
you know,
is interesting because
right
like coming into tonight, yeah, he was at a 2.95 xFIP. So
yeah, the biggest change from last year in terms of the first two outings to now is he has a 17% swing strike rate coming into tonight, and that kind of is helped by the change in his pitch mix as well. But he's still not getting ahead in counts. He had a 59% first pitch strike rate coming into tonight, but he hasn't really had a massive problem with walks in his past either. So he's the type of guy that can get behind hitters, but has the stuff to still get them out. But yeah, I think that he, you know, if we're doing like a rankings for the rest of the season, maybe we put him, I don't know, somewhere in the top 30. You know, somewhere in that vicinity. I mean, that's it seems aggressive, but
still,
at the same time,
that's a little.
I think it's a
for
possibility.
Me.
I think it's a possibility. I think an easy top 40 guy could be a top 30 if he ends up pitching all year. But I'm impressed. I think that he's doing well, and I think that he can maintain not necessarily this level, but this type of production all year long. He looks you know, pretty healthy when watching him. His mechanics look good. He just looks good. I you know, it's again, I'm probably the worst person to talk about Bundy because I've been wrong year in and year out on him. But I mean Jason Collette was really in on Bundy this year, and part of me was like, you know what, I should just listen to Collette. He's kind of the Bundy whisperer. The other part of me was like, you know, I just don't believe in it. But right now it looks like he might be able to put it all together.
And Jason is he's really happy. He's pounding his chest a little bit. I love Bundy, and I really like a kid like this to succeed, someone who had such high promise with his prospect pedigree that struggled to stay healthy. I mean, ultimately, like, that was the issue. He couldn't stay on the field, missed the entire 2013 season.
Thought he was going to be a reliever, right? I mean, for a while, people thought he was going to be a long reliever or somebody like that.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was shocking to see him. You know, they actually brought him up as a reliever originally, so that way they wouldn't lose him to the Rule 5 draft because he was out of options. And he's been really, really good this year. There are still warning signs. My biggest issue with Dylan Bundy is he struggles against left-handed hitting.
Yeah.
And he still, like, even though this season the results have been really good this season, coming into tonight, I think he was giving up
304 batting average to lefties.
I have a 292, so... Maybe it's after tonight. It's a 304, or maybe that already includes 292. Already includes tonight's. But either way, like
not good.
It's not good. And he's faced some lineups that are really right-handed heavy, including tonight's lineup of Toronto, who only had I believe three left guys who could bat left-handed. One lefty in Curtis Granderson, two switch hitters in Smoke and Morales. And Morales left the game.
Yeah, they didn't start Solarte. I don't know why. I mean, he ended up getting three at-bats, but I didn't understand prior to the game starting why they were not starting Solarte.
Didn't make sense to me. Where are you going to put him?
Yeah, I guess.
I guess you could put him in for Diaz. I don't know that they like Solarte at shortstop.
I don't think so either. I think they want to put him at second.
So I don't know why you don't put him at second over Devon Travis.
Travis, yeah.
Personally. But ultimately, I mean, this again, another right-handed lineup, you know, so this is, we've seen him start off pretty hot, but he's not having to face a ton of lefties so far. He did fairly well against Minnesota, who's got, you know, a number of lefties, did really surprisingly well.
Against Astros, yeah.
Against the Astros. You know, I mean, he carved them up in six innings. Only gave up one earned run, only walked two batters. But again, like the Astros are a really right-handed lineup. You know, all they have is Josh Reddick and Derek Fisher. And I guess Marwin Gonzalez, too. So I think
Ryan
they're...
McCann.
No, McCann's right-handed.
Ryan McCann is not right-handed.
He bats...
Evan Gattis is right-handed.
Doesn't McCann bat right-handed? Or am I wrong about this?
No. Yeah, you're wrong about this.
Okay, well then, I have been misled. I've been misled by Roster Resource.
Do they say right-handed out there?
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
And, I should have known that because I totally used McCann against a righty the other day. So in DFS, but now I sound like the idiot. But whatever.
Damn you, roster resource! Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'll have to send them an email and remind them that Brian McCann is a lefty. And like I said, I should have known that one. Anyways, he has faced a number of pretty right-handed lineups already in Houston and in Toronto. Did well against a balanced offense in terms of right-handed versus lefties in Minnesota. I think there are going to be struggles. Obviously, I'm not ready to put him inside of my top 30, but he's easily inside of my top 40. So I think that is a pretty good ringing endorsement for a guy that you didn't have to spend much on draft day. And so, like, this isn't a sell high for me. This is a continue to ride him right now.
Yeah, you just don't think he's going to be this good.
Yeah, for sure. Like this is
what's best case scenario for this year? Like, do you think over under 3.5 ERA?
I'm going to say over, but not by much.
I think he's slightly under.
Really? Okay. Over. I worry when Camden Yards heats up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, last year, let's see what he did in the second half last year. He went 4.59 ERA, 1.13 whip, somewhere in that vicinity. I know they do it different on Fangraphs with their first half and second half splits, but that definitely could be to his detriment whenever it heats up. We'll see. You know, I mean, this is why Bundy's so hard to peg, because his consistency has been up and down. It's been tough. So I would actually try and buy, though, if the price isn't too high. And that's kind of the fear, is that maybe people are maybe losing their crap a little bit about him because Collette has been touting him. And I like try giving Ozzie Albies from anybody right now. Like, nobody will trade him.
No,
because,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
but I think you might be able to. I think there are going to be people who try to sell high on Dylan Bundy.
Possibly.
And if you're getting him as a top 40 pitcher, like that price, I'm fine with that. Like, I don't have a problem with that.
I think he will have a career high in strikeouts.
For sure.
I feel good about. So at the very end, you can at least feel okay about him being able to strike out. I mean, he's going to be facing a Rays lineup a ton this year that is probably the worst in baseball. The Blue Jays are not nearly as potent as they have been in years past. I mean, he does get the Red Sox and the Yankees, but I do feel comfortable about his strikeouts, probably more so than most pitchers. I mean, he might end up being top 15 in terms of starting pitchers and strikeout rate.
And for me, like, one of the things that's really encouraging is, in spite of the fact that he spent the majority of his minor league career hurt, he's been very healthy since coming to the majors.
Yes.
And so there's no reason to think that the almost 170 innings he threw last year can't be repeated. And if he's throwing, you know, double-digit strikeouts per nine over the course of this year and getting 160 to 180 innings, I mean, this is potentially a 200-strikeout guy.
Yeah, which is hard to come by. Mm-hmm. Right now, I mean, so his innings is definitely something
important.
Underrated too.
I mean, it's one of the reasons, you know, in spite of, you know, even if he, like, one of the reasons Jeff Samardzija was so valuable last year and has been valuable in other years is because he pitches and he gets strikeouts. Like, the ERA may not be great, the WHIP may not be great, but he's going to load you up on strikeouts and innings, which is important.
Yep. Yep, not having to drop a guy or put a guy on the DL to pick up another guy off the free agent market. I mean, yeah, it's really important.
So, all right, let's talk about Ken Giles. Giles has struggled a little bit to start the season. Really struggled in the postseason last year. Brad Peacock was thrown in the other day to get a save opportunity. Giles wasn't available. He had pitched the previous 2 days. He had struggled. Manager AJ Hinch decided to give him the night off no matter what happened. Peacock comes in, saves a 4-1 ball game on Sunday. Are you worried about Ken Giles, who not only is struggling in terms of the amount of hits he's giving up, the amount of earned runs he's giving up, but he's not striking anybody out?
Yeah. Yeah, I have long loved Giles, and I really liked him as a possible like top 6-7 closer this year that wasn't going at quite that price. He's missing on his first pitch. He's not getting ahead of hitters right now, and that's last year I'm going through his month-to-month first pitch strike rate, and he did have 1 month where it was less than 50%, but the rest of them were over 60. Right now he's at a 53% in what, three and change innings, or maybe even two and change at this point, and it's tough for me to. Part of it, I think, is a mental thing for Giles because he did fall out of favor in the playoffs last year. He comes into this season as the guy, but in two of his outings, he gives up a run. He's given up multiple hits in two of those outings as well. Right now I'm starting to think or believe that he is hitting kind of a mental roadblock and maybe has a bit of a confidence issue as well. The strikeouts are certainly concerning as well, like 13% swing strike rate. Like, he's been a 15%+ guy his whole entire career, and maybe we can sum that up to just 1 month, but last year once again he was over 16% in swing strike rate every single month except for April, which is kind of coincidental, but every month as well, really good strikeout rates. I am a bit worried overall about his strikeout rate, his role, because they have guys back there that can easily take him out of there. I will say with Peacock, though, while he would probably do a fabulous job in the closer's role for the Astros, I think they want to use him for more things. I think they want to use him in higher leverage situations. They probably want to use him for multi-inning duty if the game dictates or whatever. They have Davinsky. I believe that Giles will probably keep the role, but I am a bit worried based on his results today. But again, it's only three innings. Maybe we shouldn't get so bent out of shape about it.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit worried too, just because it's not so much about the skills. I think the skills are still there. He's still getting swings and misses outside of the zone. The swing strike rate is down, but it's not like it's cratered. It's not like it's 8%. It doesn't match up with what we're seeing in terms of his K percentage, which has dropped to about 12%. So like, he's not walking guys. Like, I don't think he's issued a walk yet. He's been living in the zone too much. He's leaving things up in the zone and they're getting hit. So, like, the results have not been good. I think he will turn it around. My biggest concern is that AJ Hinch says enough.
Yeah.
And, moves him out of the role. And then, like you mentioned, there's so much talent in this bullpen.
Yeah. Will Harris, Hector Rondon, Joe Smith, Colin McHugh, if they really want to go there, Brad Peacock, Chris Davinsky.
Yeah, I mean, Davinsky, Joe Smith, Will Harris, Hector Rondon, all those guys, Peacock, all those guys could step in and close. And if they decide they want to give Giles a break, like, Edwin Diaz got last year, there's no guarantee he's getting that role back. Like, no, I could easily see a guy like Joe Smith or a guy like Hector Rondon, who's closed before, like, taking over that role and running away with it. So, like, not to mention, I love Chris Davinsky. I love Brad Peacock. They'd be fantastic as closers. So, like, my biggest concern is that the management loses faith in Giles. It's not about the skills for me. Like, his velocity is down, like, half a tick. That's
97 and a half miles an hour.
That's nothing to worry about. The pitches still look fine. He's leaving the ball in the zone too much. He's leaving the ball up. He's not executing. But it's not like by an atrocious amount, because like I said, he's not walking anybody. So I'm not too worried. All right, let's move on and talk about Jameson Taillon, who has started off the year absolutely fantastically. Is this a guy that you're buying right now?
Oh, hell yeah. I have Taillon in a ton of places. I'm really happy with this. This was the, right now, I'm really happy with some of the later round guys that weren't the top tier aces. Your Luke Weavers, your Jameson, he wasn't a late round guy, but he was a mid round guy. Jameson Taillon, Gerrit Cole. These are guys that if you did decide to forego some of the top options and you did go with them, you are feeling pretty good about your strategy. I'm one of them. But yeah, I love Taillon. I think that he's going to be somebody that we, we've always liked him as a fantasy industry. Last year was obviously a trying season for him based on the fact that he came back from cancer and, still pitched the majority of the year. I do feel bad that he broke Eugenio Suarez's finger, because that's kind of messed up. But he didn't do it intentionally. Don't be mad at him.
I don't believe that.
It was like, it would be funny if you like pointed to the camera and was like, "That's for you, Justin," or something. But you know, I mean, if I'm going to dive into his skills a bit, he still has a nice ground ball tilt right now over a couple games started. The strikeout rate is up, but that's really with no increase in swing strike rate. So I don't really see him continuing to have that good of a strikeout rate. But first pitch strike rate is down too, so we could see him start to lose some guys in terms of walks, and then the BABIP go up as well against. Right now he has like a 140 BABIP against. That's going to obviously regress back to the normal 300 range for pitchers. But I think that he's going to end up being a 3-ish ERA guy. And obviously the park that he plays in is really good for home runs. I'm on board with that. I think we could see an innings pitched career high for him as well, maybe in the 160 range, which would be really good. Really quality pitcher that is not going to do amazing things in strikeout rate, but definitely can do a good job of limiting home runs and having a solid ERA, and will probably again pitch 160-ish innings. Really important nowadays in this day's game. And he also is a guy that has really dropped his pitch mix to 3. He's a sinker, curve, four-seam guy, and he does a good job of getting ground balls with the sinker. He gets some whiffs with the curve. I overall, I think that this is a guy that's going to be pretty, pretty solid this year.
I think he is poised for a breakout. No, I think he's poised for a breakout. I think this is a guy that could take a step forward in his strikeout rate. I think he has shown mental toughness way beyond his years. I mean, aside from just the cancer, which is amazing, not only did he beat cancer last year, he came back and pitched afterwards and was good.
His prior injuries, two Tommy Johns.
Yeah, he went through Tommy Johns. He had like a massive hernia issue that kept him out. This is a kid who is wise beyond his years, and dude is like, does not take himself too seriously. Someone like said something about him having like balls or something like that, and he like quote tweeted him on Twitter, and he said ball because he had one removed.
That's a goat move.
Like, that's an 80 grade tweet right there. Like, it's absolutely amazing.
I might pin that tweet to my Twitter.
Yeah, like,
I'm gonna find it and pin it.
I'd like to see him jump on hitters a little bit more, like he has in previous seasons. But other than that, like, he gets good swings and misses outside of the zone. The swing strike rate is a little bit up. I think it will continue to climb. I think this is a young kid who, people forget this is like a second overall pick.
Yeah.
Like this guy had serious prospect pedigree prior to all the injury issues, through 9 innings against Cincinnati. This is a guy who could actually put up, 160 to 180 innings this year, as long as the health stays intact. And at this point, there's no reason to think it won't. He's had, 2 straight years previous to this one, where he's put up 130, 160 innings. And the only reason he didn't put up 160 last year was because he got cancer.
Yeah. You remember when Tyler Glasnow versus Tyon used to be a thing?
I was really totally in the Glasnow camp.
So was I.
I don't want to act like I've been there all along. I jumped onto the bandwagon late last year.
Yeah, I jumped on a little bit before that, but sometimes you just root for guys. So even if you don't love Tyon as like a skills type player, you have to be able to root for the guy. I mean, he's just all the adversities had to go over or come through with. And I just, I love the guy to death. I think he's going to end up doing. I mean, breakout is probably a bit rich for me. I don't think he will necessarily break out this year, but he could, just based on the fact if you do project him, say he does throw 180 innings, then that is a breakout, because I think his skills are good enough to really keep his ERA in check. And even if he does have a marginal gain in strikeout rate, that's going to really play as the innings pile up. So we could see a breakout if he just simply pitches.
Yeah, and he doesn't even need, if he can throw 180 innings, he doesn't even need a real big tick up in strikeout rate. He can just do what he did last year at 180 innings, and we're looking at a guy who's giving you 175 strikeouts.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
Oh, All right, let's move on to Zach Godley, who is currently carving up my San Francisco Giants through 4 1/3. He has 8 strikeouts, has allowed only 2 hits and no walks, no earned runs in there as well. That gives him a .79 ERA on the season. Zach Godley is a guy I invested in highly. The strikeouts weren't there in the first start, but definitely there in the second. What are your thoughts on Godley?
Let's see. How many strikeouts does he have tonight?
8 4 1/3.
Okay. I was a little worried the first 2 outings of his about the strikeout rate, so I dug into his repertoire again to see, you know, where he's missing. Right now, he's a 3-pitch guy, sinker, curveball, and cutter. I do usually like somebody that can kind of mix in a changeup with that, too, so I don't like that he has no real offering that kind of goes down and is soft, but that sounded terribly. But I do like that he still is getting a good amount of whiffs with the cutter and with the curve. It's not quite as much as last year on the curveball, but he is still generating a ton of ground balls. I mean, the sinker's getting 56% ground ball rate, curveball 54%. So that ground ball rate that we've really liked from Godley, especially the last couple of years here, I think will definitely continue. That could end up leading to some BABIP, you know, regression negatively for him. But ultimately, I think that he's going to be a guy that is going to do well this year. The humidor will probably help as well in terms of keeping the home run rate down. But even last year, I mean, 0.9 home runs per nine, I can definitely see him repeating that this year. Even if it goes a little bit higher, I'm not really opposed to that. But the ground ball rate's so good that you can really we always look for ground ball rate and strikeout rate. That's why I was asking what the strikeouts were tonight, because he is still getting some whiffs. It's a little bit down, but it shouldn't be as bad as it's been over the course of his first start and everything. So the fact that he did that will probably jump his overall swing strike rate and strikeout rate overall up a bit, and will make me feel a little bit better about it. But in short, after blabbing on forever, I like Godley this year. I think he's if we're ranking between Bundy, Tyon, what other pitchers that we talked about, Bundy, Tyon, and Gerrit Cole, I probably am going to go Cole, Tyon, Godley, and then Bundy.
Interesting. I would flip Tyon and Godley. I really like Godley, and I love the fact that I don't think the humidor will be as impactful for him as it may be for other guys in that rotation.
Robbie Ray.
It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge for Greinke. It's going to be huge for Robbie Ray, especially if the effects of the humidor actually take place, because they have not in the early season,
yeah,
but it's
right
still,
now we're not seeing a lot.
Yeah, so I mean, it's still early, and they've played some powerful offenses at home. So I'm not necessarily like ready to write off science, because if you're writing off science after a week, you're not very bright.
What's your projected innings for Godley? Do you like if you're having Tyon and Godley like match up innings wise, you would probably give the innings tip over to Godley, right? Your favorite Godley. Slightly
between Godley and Tyon.
Yeah, because you said you would flip them. You know, skills wise, they probably will end up relatively close in strikeout rate. Maybe Godley ends up with the nine.
I think Godley wins in strikeout rate. I think what becomes the bigger issue for me with Godley over Tyon is when I believe in the health a little bit more with Godley. You know, as much as I'd love to say Tyon's past all the health woes, like one, I think we're picking straws. Like, I think both these guys belong in my top 35 pitchers. You know, I probably have them right next to each other. But like, if I'm picking between the two, Godley's been healthier, and like wins are a category, and Pittsburgh sucks, and I think Arizona may be the best team in the NL West.
Quite possibly. Quite possibly.
The way the Dodgers look and the injuries they've suffered, the way the Giants look and the injuries they've suffered, Colorado has no pitching whatsoever. I think Arizona could win 95 games this year. And, like, Pittsburgh will be lucky to win 70.
Yeah. Although Pittsburgh is kind of surprising me this year.
It's early. It's early.
It is.
So, all right, let's finish out with, like, the guy everybody's talking about, and I felt remiss if we didn't include him on the list at all, but Shohei Ohtani is just absolutely destroying baseball. He is, in the last week, been the Babe Ruth as advertised. The question is for you, Mike, is any of this legit, or are certain parts of this legit, or is none of this legit?
All right, so you know, I do the Roto write-up with you, and mm-hmm. as far as his hitting, this is still a guy that, you know, at the time when he hit his third straight home run in as many games, he was still essentially hitting, what was it? You know, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but he was getting a day off before he pitched and a day off after he pitched. So in a 6-game, you know, schedule for a week, that he's going to essentially, you know, hit in half the games. And that's also if they are facing a righty. If they're facing a lefty, then they probably will keep him out. So this is a guy that will probably end up with, like, I don't know, 300 at bats, somewhere in there. And that is an AL only player. That flat out, that is an AL only player, and probably in a deeper AL format at best, to be honest with you. I understand the fact that, like, he has all this pizzazz to him, so maybe you could roster him in a deep mix, and I'm talking like 15 teams or deeper, but you're going to end up having to have a daily transaction league, not a weekly league, because you're definitely not going to be able to count on him getting consistent at bats. So I've been out on Ohtani as a hitter, not because of this skills, but because of the playing time, and I still will continue to feel that way until there is going to be no change. Like, that's just the way it's going to be this season. Him as a pitcher, I feel like we are overrating two starts, two of them both against Oakland. I'm not saying Oakland is bad on offense, but they have guys like Matt Olson, they have Matt Chapman, they have a lot of swing and miss players, boomer bust players, as you will, in their lineup. That's not to take away from Ohtani's stuff. Like we said in spring training, that his stuff looks really good, and I continue to believe that. His split finger is probably among the best in baseball. But he is, I mean, right now it's like a 44% whiff rate on that. I can't see that continuing, I would assume, but he's using that pitch 30% of the time. So if people are going to keep missing at that, at even close to that rate, then his strikeout rate is going to continue to be really, really good. And I can believe in that. I can bank on Ohtani getting strikeouts. The issues are still the same as they were in spring training. We don't know about his durability. We don't know if he can be durable for a whole entire MLB season. I still would need to see that. And right now, there is no way you can buy him. Everybody loves him so much that there's no way you're buying him at a decent cost right now. I think if you own Ohtani, I would sell him high. I would sell him for a surefire, established top 30 star. And I think that you could get that in a heartbeat because people are so kind of over the moon about him. So this isn't the takeaway from him. I love what I've been seeing, but I just don't believe that he is a guy that we can really bank on durability wise, and also a guy that's going to end up, you know, being a top 30 starter. I would need to see it first, and maybe I'll miss the boat, but I just don't think I will.
This is a guy who, from an offensive standpoint, is going to hit mistakes. If someone throws a meatball right down the middle, like Tomlin did and Gossett did, and let's be honest, Corey Kluber did.
Yeah.
Like, someone throws a meatball or, like, hangs a slider or something like that, you know, because I think it was Tomlin, I think it was actually, he hung a curveball, Tomlin did. But, like, he's going to crush it because dude has power. But the swing is long. He's going to struggle with power-breaking stuff. Especially, you know, sliders and things like that. I don't know if he can hit a changeup after seeing, you know, upper 90s heat. I think he's going to struggle as a hitter. And I think you're right, because he's only going to be able to hit 2 to 3 days a week, it really limits his upside. The place where Ohtani is most valuable is places like Fantrax with daily moves leagues. Like, you know, a league in which you can put him in as a pitcher, and then on his hitting days, throw him in as a hitter if he's playing that day. I, you know, in leagues like Tout Wars, he's either a hitter or a pitcher. Like, you can draft the two different Ohtanis. And, like, he's got no value as a hitter.
No.
I don't understand. Like, he got picked up in both the 15-team mix and the 12-team mix this week in Tout Wars, and I just don't get it.
Because he had 3 home runs in 3 straight games.
That's no, I get that, but like, that to me is insane. Like, this guy is not going, like, especially because Towers is a weekly moves league. Like, you're going to lose 3 days at least worth of games in that spot. Like, you can't do that in a weekly league. So, as a pitcher, I buy this. I honestly think that if he can stay healthy all year, he's a top 20 pitcher.
Top 20, yeah. I mean, I can see it. I just
like,
I,
don't get me wrong.
The
like,
type of guy I need to see the whole year. I need to see him do it one season.
You know, I can't like throw shade at you know, at Dylan Bundy because he faced, you know, really right-handed lineups and he struggles with lefties, and then not mention the fact that like the A's are a super right-handed lineup. You know, and
yeah, with heavy strikeout players, Matt Chapman strikes out. Who are they? Boog Powell? Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Matt Joyce. Who else are they throwing in right field? I'm blanking right now, but like Matt Olson is
Stephen Biscotti like, is the right fielder. Yeah, I mean, but like, you know, so like he's not going to do what he did, and there are going to be hiccups, but I'm of the mind too, like. If every pitcher has injury risk, right? Like, who did we say was like the safest pitcher in terms of like, you know, you were going to get 200 innings from him coming into the season? Like, Jeff Samardzija was on that list, right?
Yeah,
and he still hasn't made his season debut because he got injured in spring training. So, like, every pitcher has injury risk. Any pitcher can go down at any time. I know there's fears about Shohei Ohtani, you know, because he's never seen this type of workload. They work 6-day rotations, you know, in Japan. You know, how is he going to hold up with, you know, the you know, reports about a partially torn UCL? So far, so good. Like, I know it's super early, but we're talking about a guy who's already thrown 13 innings, struck out 18 batters in that time frame. The stuff is legit filthy.
Yeah, and this isn't new though. We were talking about, you and I talked about Ohtani a ton this spring, and you and I both were on board his stuff. Like, there was no question about how good his stuff was, and even when he was struggling, we weren't worried about it. That I think
it's all about how many innings he's gonna get. And I don't know, I was out on him because I didn't think he'd get above 130. I'm willing,
but his price was high
and the price was too high. I'm willing to say now that I was probably too low on him, but I'm still not projecting him for more than 140.
Yeah, you know? 140, 150. I mean, if you're projecting him out, if somebody is out there projecting him out for like 170 innings, then he's borderline a top, 12 starter at that point. If everything I'm saying is anti-Ohtani, but at the very end of the day, I do think that he is a 2.5 to 3 ERA guy with an outstanding strikeout rate and decent walk rate. Like, that's what I think he is when he's on the field. So if you believe in the durability, then there it is. I think that he's going to stay true to that.
And I think the thing is, like, even if he only gets 140 innings, he could still strike out 175 batters.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then, like, he'll more than likely, he'll either be shut down early, or they'll start skipping starts, and you'll know. It's not like you're going to get zeros in that spot. Like, you're going to be able to fill in with somebody else. You know, that's just more dangerous in deeper formats, and that's what I tend to play.
Yeah. I do think there's a case to be made that, you know, he is going to see these teams first, and they're going to have to get a kind of a book on them, and then he's going to see them a second time, and what's going to happen then. He did see the Orioles for the second time, and it was actually better than the first time, and it really wasn't close, to be honest. He just absolutely mowed them down. So maybe he has the stuff that really teams will need to see him 2, 3, 4 times before they really can kind of get a book on him. And there's a lot of guys out there. He might just be an elite pitcher.
There are going to be moments where Ohtani is unhittable.
Yeah. And that split is again, it might be the best in baseball. It might be the best I've seen in years.
Like, they're different pitchers, but this is, this reminds me of McCullers in a way. Like, when McCullers is on, like, no one can touch him.
Yes.
But when McCullers is not on, it's going to be ugly, and you're not going to see a lot of innings. And I think there are going to be a number of starts like that for Ohtani. So, like, if you think you can get a top 15 to 20 pitcher, just like McCullers, like, when McCullers pitches, he's like a top 10 pitcher, right? Like, when you know McCullers is on the field, like, and healthy, like, he's a top 10 to 15 pitcher. Like, I feel the same way about Ohtani, but like, I don't know what the innings total is going to be like, and I don't know, you know, this is a guy he's learning a whole new world, you know, aside from Major League Baseball. He's learning, like, what it's like to be in America. He's 23 years old. There are going to be struggles. There are going to be times where he can't find the zone. And so, like, yeah, like, there's going to be times that he should be ranked around, you know, top 25 to top 30 starter. But the skills are there for him to be top 10 for sure.
And this is a team, let's not forget, this is a team in the Angels that has deep playoff aspirations here. Like, and if they are going to throw him for the whole season, including the playoffs, if and when they do make it there, they're going to have to skip starts at some point, and it's going to end up affecting the fantasy season. I just don't
know how they do it, man. They've already lost two starters this week.
Yeah, they have, and luckily they have Heaney coming back.
Heaney looks good. Heaney looks good in his extended spring training from reports. But like, how many innings do you really expect to get from Heaney? They've lost JC Ramirez for the year. Matt Shoemaker just hit the DL again. They have some
prospects. I can see them going for Archer over in the Rays. I mean, they can definitely make some moves based on the fact that they've drafted pretty well the last couple of years. So just from a pure baseball standpoint, they might be able to get themselves some reinforcements there. But Ohtani is probably one of the most interesting stories I've seen in fantasy baseball for a long time. We've never seen this type of player before. And it kind of makes me excited for the Rays to bring Brendan McKay up in 2025, whenever they develop him and bring him up to the league.
He's not going to be doing both. But that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Mike, why don't you remind people where you reached and what you're working on?
Yeah, reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. I do the Roto write-up on Fangraphs a couple days a week. I do the bullpen report on Fangraphs one day a week. I do the daily matchups column on Baseball HQ on Mondays. So, yeah, check out any other podcasts I do on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. I did do a guest spot for, I think it's the Bubba podcast. I don't even know what that podcast is.
Around the Bases Pod.
Around the Bases Pod. So that will be coming out if you're listening to this on, Tuesday. It probably came out today. So check that out. It was a lot of fun. And just keep on keeping on, guys. It's going to be a long road. It's a marathon, not a race.
Not a sprint. Marathon is a race.
Marathon, not a sprint, whatever it is. You know what I'm saying. It's been a long week. All right.
It's Monday. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my work over on Fangraphs or Fantasy Alarm, where I'm writing 4 to 5 days a week for both. So that's, anywhere from 8 to 10 articles there. You can follow all the happenings for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational at TGFBI on Twitter. Our dude Smata, who I'm still pronouncing his name wrong, I don't care what anybody says, has been doing amazing things with the standing stock. So go check that out on Twitter. I'm going to have him make an article for it, because it needs to be a reoccurring piece. Yeah. So people who aren't on Twitter can actually see just the amazing job he has done with the, he's doing fab reports with it. He's doing amazing charts and graphs that I don't even understand, because they're too nerdy even for me. definitely go check that out. You can hear me on Sleeper in the Bus, the Great Fantasy Baseball Podcast, the Tout Wars Hour on Sundays on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Am I forgetting anything, Mike?
You probably are, but we don't have an hour to listen to every single thing that you're a part of. So, let's wrap it up. No, I'm just
trying to get paid, yo. That will wrap us up. For Mike and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.